Welcome to KMXT's Talk of the Rock, our local community affairs program, where we explore issues and organizations related to our community. Talk of the Rock is hosted by members of the KMXT news team.
And welcome to
this week's edition, not this week's. We've been doing Talk of the Rocks. It's important to get that plural noun in there where it's supposed to be. This week, as part of our fall fun drive, and we've been talking to a lot of people from around the community. Our theme for this week is Community Matters. And so we've had several discussions with people from all over town about how they see public media, KMXT, important to the work that they do, and just talking about where they are at this point in the COVID-19 situation that we're in, the election season that we're in. And so we're capping off this week of some very interesting and engaging discussions on Talk of the Rock with discussion with other community journalists from around town, other reporters who have been kind of thrust into what is probably one of the most interesting years in journalism probably ever, but maybe especially even for Kodiak and community journalism. So let's just go around the room and introduce yourself and what you do and where you're from. So we'll start over here with Dylan, who just popped in. Hey, Dylan.
Hi. Hello. I'm Dylan Simard. I work with Jared here at KMXT. I am from the Seattle area originally, and I just graduated from Arizona State University's Walter Cronkite School of Journalism, and now I am out here doing some good old-fashioned community reporting.
Good old-fashioned. And I forgot to introduce myself, too. I was just really excited about talking to you all today. My name is Jared Griffin. I've been with the radio station for well over a decade now, but really kind of helping out with some of the newsroom stuff and been learning a lot of the really cool stuff that our local reporters do too. So I'm really excited to talk to everyone today. All right, and next, Dylan, we have Sarah.
Yeah, I'm Sarah Lapidus. I'm from San Francisco, California, and I've been here for about a year and a half now, reporting a lot of fun, exciting things.
Yeah, I'm Andrew Kennison. Yes, I'm originally from East Tennessee. I worked for a small newspaper in Georgia for a couple years, and then I moved up here in Kodiak in July. So I've been here, 3.5 months? Yeah. 4 months?
So from all over the country, you have come here to work and to live and report on community. So let's talk about what you find really important and fulfilling about community journalism, and we can start back over here with Andrew.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of things. I mean, one, you get to get your feet wet a lot of different ways. You know, if you're a healthcare reporter at the New York Times, like, you report on healthcare. If you work for the Kodiak Daily Mirror, you report on basically everything. So anything is possible to talk for a story for us, because there's just Sarah and I, more or less.
Yeah.
And so we get to do all kinds of different things and learn all kinds of different things. So I find that to be really interesting. Every day is different, which I definitely like. Beyond that, I feel like community journalism gives sort of a sense of place, to a location, telling people like what is important about their location and where they live, their home. And yeah, I think that's a cool thing that we get to do as well.
I agree. I love that we get to inform people about what's going on in their community, to help them make decisions, about their community. And I love the range of topics we cover. I remember my first couple weeks here, I went from reporting on ferry strikes to pollock season, and I didn't even know what pollock was, so that was fun.
You have to become like an instant expert in a whole lot of different things.
Yeah,
there's lots of learning to do. I mean, you know, yesterday I was attended, you know, a shark dissection at the school, watched someone cut open a shark, and then today I'm writing about, you know, COVID-19,
mm-hmm.
which
My reasons are far less selfless. I personally,
well, so are ours. We're just saying.
I really enjoy stories. I really enjoy hearing different perspectives from different people from all sorts of walks of life. And in a community like Kodiak, there are lots of interesting people here. And there's certainly no end to the amount of very exotic stories that you can find on this island. And to be part of the storytelling for that it's a wonderful experience.
Yeah, you know, that's something that I learned from Rhonda McBride, who is a staple in Alaska reporting and journalism, and she got to spend a few months with us this summer, is learning about storytelling as getting to know people, you know, as learning their stories. What are some of the more interesting, maybe not necessarily interesting, but you know, what has stuck out to you about the people and their stories? We're in, not just here in Kodiak, but you know, other places that you've worked and lived. How does that figure into how you shape your stories?
That's a big question.
Do you find the story first, or do you find the person first and then find the story with the person?
It's a mix. It's really a mix. I remember one story I did in Phoenix. It was a profile on the guy who was his name was Tim Shea. He was running for mayor of Phoenix as a Freemason candidate.
Wait, there's a Freemason party?
No, he was just a very high-ranking Freemason.
Oh, interesting.
And he was just such an interesting guy. He had this incredible life story. He had worked all these different jobs, and then here he was. A fairly young guy who's in charge of this like enormous larger national organization of Freemasons in the region. And he just says, "Yeah, I'm running for mayor. I think I have a good perspective." And it was just a very interesting story to cover, because I mean, there is like historically there's been an anti-Masonic party. I'm not familiar with I don't think anyways that there's like a Freemason party, and here he was just running as the quote-unquote Freemason candidate for the Phoenix mayoral election.
Wow. Yeah, no kidding.
That's wild. How did you meet him? How'd you find him?
I can't even remember how I got that story.
It's so long ago.
It's the sort of thing where you just forget how you got there, and you're more, you're just experiencing it at that point, right? You're along for the ride.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. To me, one of the many downsides of the pandemic is that you don't meet as many people. Just generally, I being new here, I haven't met as many people just going to like the brewery or going to a coffee shop as I might have other places that I've worked, and that has historically been a way for me to find interesting people to talk to for stories and ideas for stories. So it's been a bit of a challenge to meet people like nowadays.
What's really getting me is I keep forgetting to, sometimes I'll do my interviews over the phone and then I'll realize, oh no, I don't have pictures for my stories because I'm used to just being in the field with a camera and taking them myself. Keeps on getting me. It keeps happening. I say it won't, and almost every story it feels like I need to go find pictures.
Well, let's talk about that. What have some been the other challenges of reporting during COVID that you've encountered, or maybe even some unforeseen successes? Sarah, what have you? I think out of the three of you here, you've been here the longest, right? Yeah. So you've really experienced that transition. What has that been like for you?
At the beginning, it was pretty challenging because we wanted to capture how COVID was affecting every sector and everybody in restaurants, it was hard to know how it was affecting every part of the community. And Iris, who was here before her, and I was like, we couldn't work fast enough to try and get all the stories. And it was really interesting that it affected people in ways that we didn't always realize, and that definitely came out in our stories. But it definitely had us interviewing people we might not talk to, so we definitely got to know the community a lot better. Mm-hmm. And it made us kind of reach out of our comfort zone to try and find stories and rack our brains about how this could be affecting the community in ways we couldn't imagine. So it was definitely different.
I think I found myself almost in a way like, well, what did we talk about before?
Yeah, I was like, what are we going to do after?
Yeah. What are we going to do after? Yeah.
Well, and we were also working from home too, which was, it made me feel a little more disconnected from, I mean, being in the newsroom, people were throwing ideas at each other, we'll get calls, and it's a definitely, there's an energy that you don't get when you're working in your house, like just by yourself. And it made me feel a little more disconnected from the community as well, which is why I was grateful for a chance to be able to write these stories and try and call gyms and call anyone that I could think of, you know, to get their stories out there so people knew what was going on.
Yeah, I mean, just it's a really small thing, but I mean, interviewing someone over the phone and interviewing someone in person is like very different. And in person, it's far richer. You get... there you go on more tangents, you get more sidetracked, which is to me usually a good thing, especially being new here, you learn more. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you're doing more over the phone, it's harder to get people to open up and harder to get people to just talk about all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
People are more themselves in person. There's a lot of sort of posture that's sort of enforced by like the phone calls are often like, sure, it's like a social thing, but for many people it's also how they're doing professional communication now. So people have a bit more of a professional posture in how they speak over the phone. But if you're trying to really capture somebody's personality and tell an interesting story to that regard, you can find people showing a bit less of themselves when they're just talking to you on the phone.
And you feel that that's really kind of affected your storytelling over the past?
Yeah, it's more difficult to sort of, yeah, like Dylan says, like sort of like capture the whole of the person. I mean, there are people who I've interviewed, like mostly public officials who I've never met in person at this point. You know, they just know me as a voice on the phone and I know them as a voice on the phone, you know, which is kind of sad. And it definitely, it makes it a little more challenging, I think.
What else do I have here? So let's jump back just a little bit. What are some of these other, over the past 6 months or so, what are some of these community-based stories that you've worked on that you've been most proud of during this period?
Gosh, so many. It's a lot of stories. Something small, I think there was two that were short stories, but really important to the community, and they were hard to get. And I guess it's a little more than 6 months, but the two were the Scandies Rose, when the Scandies Rose sank, and then the outbreak at Alitac. So when the Scandies Rose sank, that was the first time I'd heard of something like that happening. And it was just like waiting for information from all these different people and going on Facebook and who's who. And it was just a lot of, it was the hardest reporting I've had to do, because you really just, you spend hours looking for people to talk to, who's who, hopefully the Coast Guard would get back, speaking with the Coast Guard every, I don't know, 30 minutes, 20 minutes, every updates, and calling people in town that would have been affected. And I feel like that was one of the most important stories. Definitely heartbreaking and difficult to write about, especially talking to the family members that were affected. It was very emotional.
So what kind of training do you get, either in school or from mentors about covering tragedies, even like personal tragedies or, you know, very close-knit community kinds of tragedies? Do you get any kind of training in that?
It's the sort of thing where you, like, there is training, but it's, the training is always a mile away from what the experience will actually teach you about it. It's I guess a community story that stands out to me was doing coverage of the recent earthquake and tsunami warning, because KMXT really does play like a pivotal role in getting that communication across. We're doing like a live broadcast all the time. Pam Forman was on air doing all this incredible work, letting people know what the situation was, what we knew so far. And I was, you know, in the office making calls to just about every government agency I could think of to get more and more information. And it's scary. And there are sirens going off. That doesn't help.
Right. And we're here right by the high school. So we see, you know, hordes of people just kind of, you know, coming in and looking over at us through the windows to see if they can see what we're doing.
Yeah. I remember like in one of my, my journalism, like 201 or something, where they're teaching you like very, very basic reporting stuff. We did like a drill, so to speak, where we were doing tweets that we had to include disclaimers in that they weren't real about the Palo Verde nuclear power plant in Arizona just melting down and just like, I don't know, destroying.
Oh, interesting.
It. Yeah, not a good time. Completely different from actually covering an earthquake, as you can imagine. You just can't bring them closer together. Hmm. Because you, as a reporter, you're still in an area with a tsunami warning, right? You're not like entirely divorced from the the actual risk, and you have to keep a level head and do your job.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm just taking notes. That's what I do. I take notes. I love notes. What else? Other stories, Andrew? What about you?
Sometimes I think of here trying to think of stories instead of just like one story. So like series of stories, coverage you give certain things. I enjoyed this summer talking about how schools would open in the fall. I think it was a big question mark for a lot of people and trying to get a lot of different perspectives on that question. I mean, I wrote, you know, I don't know, a lot of stories about that. And that was, I thought it was interesting. That was fun. And I learned a lot. And it was a little bit, you know, it sounds hokey, but it was a little bit like inspiring to think that like, well, this virus happened and then, you know, literally hundreds of people came together and tried to figure out how do we make school happen?
Yeah.
And that was cool to see.
I think another story that I didn't think was going to be as popular as it was, we don't always get a ton of feedback when our stories are great. Sometimes we do, but not always. And I got some feedback on how to cope during COVID when it first hit and when everyone was hunkered down and people were feeling maybe a little hopeless or just like tired of being inside. I did a story. I interviewed a yoga teacher, and people I heard a couple people say how it they liked it and it helped them. So that was nice.
So how do you how do you see that difference between reporting on, you know, a story like Andrew did, like here's what the school is planning. Then you have this kind of, not self-help, but it's still really good information. How do you kind of broker out those kinds of, how do you kind of prioritize those kinds of stories?
That's a really good question. I think that as like, you know, the community journalists, I think they're both important. I mean, probably, I mean, to me, I think that like the hard information sort of comes first, like the essential need to know information. But I think it's also really important to do that kind of thing, you know, as Sarah is talking about, give people like a sense of their community and make them feel proud to live here.
You'll have to save questions about like what stories take priority for the editors.
I guess so. You're right. No, that's actually a really good point. Yeah.
and I mean like just for context, the question of like what stories take precedent is a question as old as the business of journalism. That's something people are still figuring out.
Mm-hmm.
As for me, I just try to keep my head screwed on and go about getting the news out to as many people as possible.
Yeah, there's not like a definition of like what newsworthy is.
There you go. You know, thank you. Yes.
You can't look it up. It doesn't really exist.
There
just
are
like
lots of definitions. But all of them are equally useless.
They're all like wrong in their own way. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what else would you like our listeners to know about how community journalism or how it works in a relatively small community like ours?
I mean, it's very relationship based. And I kind of tell people sometimes that, like, I mean, there's no possible way that, like, I can know everything, obviously. But, like, I can do my best to know who knows everything, you know, so, like, when something happens, you know who to contact. Being, you know, moving somewhere new that I didn't know anyone before I got here, it's a challenge to try to, like, develop those relationships. But we're getting there.
And we really lean on our colleagues that have been in Kodiak for a long time, because we don't always have that historical knowledge that really informs our pieces and who to talk to and what it means for the community when something happens. I didn't have a fisheries background before, so I didn't always understand what some of the things meant and what the events were happening, if they were a big deal, does it matter, is this a story, do people care? And that takes time, and also the knowledge of people who've been here for a while.
Mm-hmm. Right. Shout out to Derek
yes.
Clarkston.
Sports
editor, been here for 14 years. He's sort of like, at our end, he's sort of like the institutional knowledge, mm-hmm. and he's really, really helpful to, like Sarah says, like, hey, is this important?
I'm actually been kind of curious about that on the print side. Over here in radio, we have the, Alaska Public Radio Network, and so Dylan mentioned the tsunami warning, and whenever something like that kicks in, we've got a Slack channel, and we have other reporters from around the state who have these contacts, you know, who are kind of helping feed us information. Over at the newspaper, what kind of do you have a statewide regional support system?
Sounds nice.
Or is it Derek? Or is his name Derek?
We definitely bounce ideas off of each other. We'll ask each other who to call, what's going on here if we don't know. But we have each other.
Having people to call is always really important. You mentioned a moment ago, like fish stories, and I remember I was talking to Lainey Welch about different fish issues. And she asked me, she said, have you ever worked on like a fish story before? And I said, oh, you know, I did something on like fish in Arizona. And she just started laughing at it, which I completely understand. Not completely understand, but I have a greater appreciation of now. It's really, Arizona doesn't have a lot of fish.
It's like four fish.
And I'm sure politics probably don't figure too much into Arizona or Arizonan fisheries, right?
No, it's all immigration there all day.
All right, so we've got about we got about 3 minutes left or so. Let's kind of circle back to why we find the work that you do, the reporting you do, the journalism that you do, still important to local communities where there are innumerable news outlets where people around here can get their news, either fact-based, opinion-based, or rumor, you know, through social media. With this changing landscape in media and journalism, how do you see the work that you do fit into all of that for us?
Community reporting never goes away. You can always turn on the TV and you can flip to like Fox or CNN or MSNBC and you'll have national reporting and you will have some degree of understanding about the events of the day. But if you want to know what happened yesterday in Kodiak or, you know, 5 years ago in Kodiak, you simply can never, the people who live there can tell that story.
It's not on Wikipedia. You can't find it.
Yeah.
And the speaking more to the broader point, for me, it's really wonderful to be participating in the oral storytelling tradition, particularly locally. For this moment in time, I am contributing to the oral history of Kodiak by way of putting my voice on the radio and telling some of the stories of the day. And that's wonderful. If people are trying to look at any of the events that occurred that I've personally reported on, they'll go and they'll find a record of my reporting, and that'll be the recording of that history.
Mm-hmm. And newspapers are considered the first draft of history.
Yeah. I mean, like kind of like Dylan said, I mean, if you want to go find out what's happening in Washington, D.C., there's 500 ways you could do that. But if you want to find out what's going on in Kodiak, I mean, there's two. I mean, if we don't tell the stories, like, I don't think, I mean, who's going to, you know?
Exactly. And we record what's going on, what's changing on a daily basis, weekly basis. And I think that's important, especially for people to realize what's going on in their community. Without community reporting on like the local level, that's just, once if that disappears, that's a big loss for communities. They might not know what's going on and how things are changing.
In the final seconds that we have, let's do a little prognosticating. What are some of the big stories or interesting stories you see kind of coming down the pike over the next, other than the election, obviously, but maybe over like the next month or so? What do you kind of see on the horizon?
I will mention the election because don't expect any easy answers for that election.
True.
That is going to be a month-long process. There's with the way that mail-in voting works and with all these different states, don't expect any easy resolutions on day one. Mm-hmm. We will be doing coverage of it the whole time. I'm sure the Daily Mirror will as well. There will be plenty going on.
Yeah. In the near future, I mean, I'm obviously pretty interested in like how the borough resolves its budget problems. Mm-hmm. Those gears are going to start turning, I think, sooner rather than later. And I mean, goes without saying also that, you know, COVID-19 here on the island is an ongoing worry. So
Definitely COVID funding, emergency funding. Will there be more? How long will it last? How businesses are going to fare if there is no more emergency funding? So we'll definitely be watching out for that.
Well, thank you to my guests today on this final fund drive special edition of Talk of the Rock, Andrew Kennison and Sarah Lapidus from the Kodiaga Daily Mirror. Thanks so much for coming and for visiting our station for seeing all the lovely like LPs that we have from the 1970s all around the wall. You can grab a few on your way out. I don't think anybody will miss them. And to KMXD's newest reporter, Dylan Samard. Thank you all for joining us and for Maynard. Thanks for coming in to give us some scratches. Thanks again. I've been your host, Jared Griffin, on Talk of the Rock. And I'm going to pass it back over to Terry or Pam. I'm not sure. But thanks again for listening.